Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 348, The New Talk, live from Los Angeles, California, in Podcast Mobile Command Unit 8. I am sitting in my special acoustic chair in the mobile unit in the driveway of the house that I'm staying in Los Angeles, which is up, sort of up in the hills. It is a beautiful day in Los Angeles, California, and a couple things in this podcast. So, you know, I do my usual show prep today, and I'm certainly aware of what's going on in the world. A lot of stories and things to talk about, but I did a couple things. First of all, in this podcast, I kind of do a quick review of the trip over here from Phoenix. With the, sort of the one salient thing that I saw, a number of things that I was driving along, but I pretty much was focused on getting here last night. And then there's a person here. There's a bunch of people living in this house that are basically freelancing. They're doing different work and freelancing. And I'm very interested in this freelance culture that Los Angeles seems to embody, at least in terms of the entertainment industry and probably parts of the, you know, the digital industry, you know, sort of whatever you want to call it, the computer culture or digital industry, the people doing websites and writing code and stuff like that. So I want to talk about that a little bit. And I had a bunch of sort of updates on stories, and I just don't think it fits in this podcast. So I'll have to do another podcast here pretty quickly to kind of update you on what's going on with the news. And I will do that. There's, you know, there's obviously some economic things happening. This ridiculous Alps thing is happening. And the ridiculous coverage of the quote-unquote presidential race, it continues. It's the bane of my existence, more media stuff. But, you know, we're just kind of sitting around talking about how things get done. And it's been kind of a theme in the last couple of days with my friend in Phoenix and now here in Los Angeles, talking about how work gets done. So we're going to interview somebody who is part of the freelance culture, who shall remain nameless for reasons that will be explained in the interview. And then I'll come back and summarize and with some additional thoughts in podcast 348. Now, I got to mention that the xgovernmentcars.com grand reopening is on. I am in the grand mall. I'm in the granddaddy of all. Hey, what's up? In the middle of doing a podcast, somebody walks by heading up to one of the houses here. Did you get the macadamia nuts?
No, I just got your text.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. You know, you got to have macadamia nuts with beef jerky. Anyway, yeah, I'm sitting in the, what do I call this thing? Yes, the Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8 is the granddaddy of all ex-government cars I've ever owned. This is the fourth or fifth ex-government car that I've ever owned, and I've had a lot of great experience with Ed Johnson at xgovernmentcars.com. I've had three Crown Vics. They're great. And here's the thing. The grand reopening is currently on at xgovernmentcars.com. They have nicer, newer vehicles, Chargers, Impalas, next-gen Fords, trucks, vans, and SUVs. I got lucky because Ed helped me get this ambulance, and that's really why I was saying this is the ultimate ex-government car vehicle. Anyway, here's a couple things about ex-government cars that's great. Great financing for all levels of credit, so that is awesome. So the good, the bad, and the ugly are all approved. Everyone's approved. Ex-government cars only carries one owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles. And the truth is, when you deal with other dealers, you just don't know what you're getting. You do at xgovernmentcars.com. Only xgovernmentcars.com has it all. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson, 3-day satisfaction guarantee, financing available for all levels of credit, and you can apply online safely 24 hours a day at xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley, Minnesota, if you're in the Twin Cities. The reopening event is on now. Everything is better, and yes, I do have the bullhorn. So let me just say, I got a PA on the ambulance. Not just a bullhorn, a PA on the ambulance. The podcast Mobile Command Unit has a PA, so here we go. You ready? Don't forget, the grand reopening event is on now at
xgovernmentcars.com.
So the best way for me to describe the weather in Los Angeles is that it's kind of like September or late August, early September in Minnesota in the summer. You know, the nights are actually mid to late September. The nights are kind of cool. The days are warm. The sun is warm, and it's dry, very dry out here. Of course, we all are dealing with the drought, supposedly, out here in California. There's a whole bunch of controversy about that, and the drought is bringing out the snakes, and they're all talking about snakes, and if you go hiking, watch out for the snakes and everything else. And I'm in Los Angeles, in a up in the hills in this section of Los Angeles, and it's beautiful up here. But I think the coolest thing is the sound of the wind in the trees. It's a whole different thing from the desert in Arizona. And coming across was interesting because if you've ever driven to Chicago, if you live in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and you've driven to Chicago, or vice versa, if you live in Chicago or Milwaukee and you've driven up to the Twin Cities, it's about a six-hour trip on 94. And the trip over to Los Angeles from Phoenix is about, you know, I really didn't check it, but I'd say it's 6 or 7 hours maybe. In fact, even less than that. I think it's something like 390 miles. So it's not quite. It's more like going from Eau Claire to Chicago or somewhere around Madison maybe to Chicago. Chicago's what, 497 miles from Minneapolis? So it's 394, so it's about 100 miles east of Minneapolis would be Eau Claire, right? So it's not very long. It's not a long trip. It's dramatic because you come across this the desert, 29 palms, and all through there. But I do want to mention, so you're driving along, and you start to see these what do they call them? Windmills, the big giant windmills. And there is a couple of really big, gigantic windmill farms that are positively Orwellian when you drive by. I mean, there's a certain, it looks like aliens have invaded this beautiful valley where they have all of these windmills. And the reason I bring it up is that I have to mention this because this is one of the things that drives me crazy about the way that government gets in and distorts things, because it sure sounded like a good idea at the time. And one of them is wind power, which provides, you know, depending on how you calculate it, roughly, I think alternative energy is roughly 1% of all energy production in the United States. And wind power is functionally 0%. And yet you drive through these areas which are just dominated by these things. And I don't see how a windmill is any better than a bunch of smokestacks, like driving through Pittsburgh. I think they're just freaky, these things. They look like aliens have landed. So that was my big takeaway from my trip to Los Angeles. And then you get into Los Angeles, and I think the thing that just blows everybody away is how gigantic this place is. I mean, you know, I'm from Chicago. I'm used to big cities. I've lived in New York. I'm certainly Washington, D.C., Pittsburgh. Spent most of my life in big urban centers. This place is just, it just goes on and on and on forever. I mean, I was in essentially the, once you get to, I'm trying to think of, I guess Riverside. When you get to Riverside, Redlands, around there, you're in suburbia / urban, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And it's really amazing and incredible. And I'm not judging it. It's just, there's so many people here. And everyone, in LA proper, people work at home a lot. They're in the Starbucks. They're working in the Starbucks. They're working in these places. And it's a really interesting lifestyle. I actually like it. You know, you hear all the time, oh, L.A., This place is cool. And I'm sure I'll go to cooler places on my trip, because I think I'm going to take the PCH out of here and head north to San Francisco and then come across and come back through Reno. But so I'm taking the Donner Party Trail, I think, depending on the weather. So I'm sure I'll encounter cooler places, but this is pretty cool, L.A. So everybody in LA, there's a lot of freelance. This is sort of a freelance culture in LA, and freelance in the entertainment business. I don't know about any other business, because most of the people I know are in some way, shape, or form the entertainment business. And I am fascinated with the freelance culture. So I'm going to interview an anonymous person, and he is anonymous. Why would you want to be anonymous?
Well, you know, you just don't want to. It's best to kind of protect your name and your image, just because it's so much, has so much to do with who you know and kind of your relationships with them. It's probably better not to give out too much personal information if you don't absolutely have to.
No, and you don't. The whole thing about the podcast is we don't require attribution.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
This isn't journalism. This is fun. So tell me about the freelance culture. You've been, first of all, you went to, should we even say which university?
Yeah, that's fine.
So you went to Emerson.
Yep.
Tell me about Emerson.
Yeah, it was a really interesting school. You know, I actually applied to a major at Emerson, which was, you know, pretty run-of-the-mill. Most people do when they apply. And so I actually applied to the film program there. And their whole deal is that right when you get to college, they sort of begin to immerse you in whatever field that you applied to. So there was a lot of production classes, production overview classes when you first got there. Just to familiarize you with like things like audio recording and digital, and then ultimately you kind of moved on to analog film, which was really cool. And it was a pretty intensive education, and a lot of people sort of used their time there to spend a lot of time on set actually working. There's a lot of independent student projects. Faculty had projects that they would use students on, and so it was a really good opportunity if you were hoping ultimately to work on set in some capacity or another.
So then you came out here and here to seek your fortune in Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I moved out a little over a year ago, and I've been just freelancing ever since, which is, you know, pretty characteristic. Most people that I've brushed shoulders with in my personal experience have been freelancers. And it's a little unusual to meet somebody who actually works, you know, steadily at a production company. There are some positions that definitely cater to that. Like, you know, if you're going to be a production coordinator or a line producer, somebody who is sort of more of a logistic presence, then companies tend to hold on to those people.
But they're, you know, working in the offices.
Exactly. But for most positions on set, you know, that's something that you do job to job and you freelance, yeah.
And we were talking about that this morning, that, you know, yeah. In fact, we were sitting out here drinking coffee this morning at about 9:30, and you were, like, checking your phone to see, oh, I got a job.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that way, because, you know, depending on what kind of relationship you have with you know, particularly in my position, I work primarily as a production assistant in some capacity or another. So, depending on what kind of relationships you have with sort of your immediate superiors, which in my case would be production coordinators or line producers, when you finish a job, you know, you send a text and you send emails out and you kind of see what's out there. And occasionally, like this morning, I just had a kind of a great little run of luck where I texted a old production coordinator I knew, and they were like, yeah, you know, we got something for you next week. And I actually, you know, so sometimes it works out like that. And other times, you know, there are dry spells. In particular, near the end of the year and the beginning of the year are difficult, because I think those are times when a lot of people are doing pre-production on shows, so there's very little on-set work going on, and people typically are not shorthanded, so they don't need any help in the office either. So January and February can be kind of rough.
So if you really hustle, you can work a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially, like, I'm kind of breaking into the commercial world right now, which is really short runs, 1-, 2-, 3-day runs, and then really fast turnover. Everybody's in and out really quickly. The director I worked with, actually Monday and Tuesday of this week, flew in from New York Sunday, worked Monday, Tuesday, flew back out Wednesday. So it's this really kind of fast turnaround, but there's also, you know, depending on the time of year, there's a lot of projects.
And then you're, each time you do a project, you're learning, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You meet new people. You learn how every set's a little bit different. Everybody runs things a little bit differently. Which can, you know, getting kind of in the groove of things and sort of seeing how people do things is really helpful, because then they're more likely to hire you because you sort of, you know how they like to do it. So,
right. But yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll work with that guy. We know he's good.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's really, it's incredible, but that's how most people get their jobs out here, I've realized.
Do you feel like this is a small town? Or does it feel
in
like
some respects, it is really a small town. Actually, the guy I worked for on Monday, he interviewed me for an internship when I came out here through Emerson does an LA program for a semester, and he was one of the guys I actually wound up not taking the job. So, but he was, you know, it's nice. You meet those people and there's this immediate sense of recognition, and then, you know, you kind of have a rapport with them, and it can work out really well that way.
And then we were getting a kick out of talking about how people they'll just go on unemployment for a month or a week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just in my personal experience. I don't want to make any sort of universal statements, but it seems, from what I can tell, very popular.
But the thing I thought was interesting was the idea that the state of California is essentially subsidizing this industry by providing these people with sort of some cash in the interim.
I think if you have a huge percentage of your population that does do freelance work, like happens in LA, you know, there are downturns and, you know, people get themselves into jams. And particularly in LA, this is what you don't consider. If you're working on a show and the show gets canceled, essentially everyone gets fired. That's what that means. So it's like companies going under just day to day. So
I guess they do that in the construction business all over the country too.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. It was definitely the first time I'd ever been exposed to anything like that. But, you know, and it's ridiculous because from, you know, the highest positions, the executive producers on down, something goes wrong and then everybody's standing in the office one day sort of like preparing their unemployment and sending out texts and emails.
But people don't freak out because it's an everyday thing. It's like, yeah. Okay,
yeah, I think for a lot of people it's old hat. Yeah. You know, you're kind of just like, that happened, and now we just sort of pick ourselves up and move on. And a lot of these people will move on in kind of groups. So, you know, you'll have somebody like an executive in charge, sort of like really involved in control of sort of the logistic aspects of the show and the sort of financial aspects of the show. And then he'll have, you know, production coordinator he always works with and he likes or she likes. And then ultimately, you know, the show gets canceled and they jump onto another project and they bring the people they like with them. And so it kind of, sometimes people move in little groups. So.
And I like talking to you because you're not trying to be an actor. You're just...
No,
you're
not at all.
Guy.
That would be a difficult life, I think. The emotional strain of that is having dealt with actors from time to time, you know, behind the scenes, there's definitely sometimes tensions run high and there you get some pretty unique personalities. And I think you have to have a particular kind of mindset in order to do that, because you have to have a way of coping with basically rejection from day to day. And I think it just wears on these people. And so you get these sort of manic personalities. But, you know, I mean, most of the actors I've dealt with are really good people, so.
Sure. It's not, it's just, it goes with the territory.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But yeah.
So do the people, like in your age group, Do you find a lot of them just sort of living together, and are there some interesting living arrangements in terms of just people just kind of hanging out and living in different places? And where do these people live? Like they obviously don't live in these expensive houses up in the hills.
Definitely not. You know, there are different neighborhoods where you have a lot of these young college graduate sort of low end freelancers living, and neighborhoods like Culver City come to mind, or there's a neighborhood called North Hollywood where a lot of people who went to Emerson now live. And yeah, they live, you know, in some cases they live with the people who they actually lived with in college. But it's pretty routine to see, you know, three or four people in an apartment. There's not a lot of, like, sharing of bedrooms going on or anything like that. But there's, you know, there's definitely, like, people are cutting corners financially. So
somebody rents the apartment, it's like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of subletting going on. So people, you know, because I know some people who bounce back between here and New York, and so they're kind of subletting and they're just sort of following the work.
So everything's in a backpack.
Yeah.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of like it, honestly. It's nice being mobile and not being too pinned down. You know, you can kind of resist the routine of any one office that way, which is in some ways immensely rewarding.
Well, if you're creative, nobody wants to. I am completely a proponent of just cutting the cord completely. Just, who needs an office? Who needs a house? Who needs any of that stuff? And it just, I mean, I know it's obviously, if you have a family or something, I suppose you couldn't do it that way. But, you know, people raise their kids on sailboats. That's the same thing. What do you, you know, you, so when, one more question, which is because I don't want to go too long, but I mean, so you're doing this freelancing. Where does this eventually lead to? So what kind of formation does this lead to in terms of career? You just keep going until you get bigger and bigger jobs, and then eventually you're, you know, where does this go?
I mean, it's really hard to make inroads. You know, it's very difficult to move from scripted to unscripted TV. I think in that order, I think it's relatively easy to move from scripted to, I mean, sorry, from unscripted, from scripted into unscripted, but not the other way around. So
you're talking about shows that are fully produced.
Yeah, like reality shows versus like, yeah, like, you know, your kind of like fictional narratives. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of luck, and it's kind of what you might expect. You know, it's a lot of who you know, and it's a lot of sort of, you kind of encounter an opportunity here or there to do something that you weren't able to do before, and you kind of just go for it.
So you'll just keep banging away until...
Yeah, exactly. Basically, you know, again, try and move a little bit more into commercials these days. That seems like a nice little stepping stone into... I'm trying to get into unscripted. But yeah, and then just sort of keep working day to day.
Pretty nice place to live, though.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. So,
what's so interesting about freelance culture and freelancing, and this is just one person in the entertainment business, but the reason I wanted to include that interview was so people could hear kind of how the work gets fitted together. I've known a lot of people to do contracting work, and it's the same kind of thing. And it doesn't matter that it's necessarily Los Angeles versus somebody doing contracting work in Minneapolis or St. Paul. But for years, you know, contractors went through this whole seasonal thing where they worked during the summer and then off, they were off and on unemployment during the winter, or they had to piece together work because they were freelancing the work. And the way work is changing in our society today, more and more people are freelancing. More and more people are doing all these different things and sort of piecing them together. And I think that's really cool. I think it's one of the things, and I don't know if I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, I probably did, but we had to go out today to get coffee, and we ended up visiting somebody's house that we were working with that does some work with some people here. And they were, you know, people are at home all day. It's just weird because you see these people that are at home and, you know, you think nobody's doing anything, but they're all working on these different projects. And I kind of think one of the things about California and one thing about the West in general is this has always been on the cutting edge of society and the way that things get done out here. And I wonder, you know, coming from the Midwest and the whole Midwestern experience, I wonder how we're going to see that change in the future. And I actually like the idea of piecing together work and having everybody sort of be a knowledge worker, or everybody sort of being in business for themselves. And if they're not in business for themselves, then they're working for companies where they're able to piece together work. I don't think in the future that that companies will exist in the present in the sense that we know them today, or that we, if you're a certain age in this country, you've been brought up with this idea of corporations. I don't see them operating the same way with the same kinds of labor forces that we have seen in the past. And I think it's one of the issues with our economy. And I alluded to this in the intro to this podcast, that there's an awful lot to talk about in terms of news stories. And I really haven't been talking about economics because I'm kind of waiting for more numbers to come in. Because for me, it's a question of what works versus what doesn't work, and is the jury in or out on whether what we did in the last 6, 7, 8 years is actually working or not. But anyway, I think one of the problems in our economy, and you hear a lot of people saying things like, well, this kind of, you know, somebody wrote a piece last week that said suburbs are hurting the economy because it's forcing people to live in these communities where they have to drive around to do everything. And it's silly because it doesn't make any sense. But I mean, that's what they do here. I mean, and people end up they work at home. They end up having meetings at home. They end up, and I'm not talking about people with mansions. I'm talking about people that are just doing work, or they're working on the site or on a set or at a place for a little while. Then they go work for someplace else in another location. I'm not sure that the current corporate structure and the way things get done in most places in this country. Now, I'm talking about the places I've driven through, the Des Moines of the world and the, you know, the Minneapolis St. Pauls of the world and the towns where people get up in the morning and they get in their cars and they go to work and they go someplace to work. I don't know that that's really going to be the way it is in the future. And I think a lot of people today think that's how it's going to be in the future, that because that's the way we've always done it. You know, we've always gotten into our cars or whatever, and we've gone off to work. It's really been centuries since most people did their work at home. And that was when we were largely, if not completely, agriculture. We were all farmers or serfs. today you kind of piece work together. And these people here, you'll come into a place and people seem as though that they're idle, but at the same time they're answering messages on their phones. They're they're communicating with friends. They're getting together and trying to figure out where they're going to do the next project and where they're going to work. And so it's an interesting way of looking at work. So if we expand that to the way that work gets done today and the way companies operate with these huge labor forces, do we need all those people? And this is all, you know, kind of ties into this view of how we design cities and what infrastructure is going to be needed for and how it all works. Because I don't know that you can say with any level of confidence, especially given technology, that work has to be done, accomplished the way it was always done and accomplished before. I mean, this thing that I'm broadcasting from right now is a perfect example. We were just talking about it. Of course, this is all I think about and talk about because I'm now obsessed with the podcast mobile command unit. I'm really untethered. I can really go anywhere. I don't have to be anywhere. I can be anywhere I want to be to do whatever I want to do, to cover whatever kind of story I cover, because I'm carrying my office on my back completely. And this is pretty extensive because this is a vehicle. I mean, it doesn't have to be a vehicle. I wouldn't carry studio mics with me and everything. But you really can be anywhere and upload almost everything that you do somewhere else. And this is starting to sort of take hold and people beginning to understand what that all means. And if you fit it all together with robotics and autonomous machines and all this stuff, this is all going to fit together into a completely new and different way of doing business, of government, of governing, of working together, of playing together and communicating in the 21st century. And it's just beginning. And to me, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. So when I look at economic news, what I'm really looking for is what kind of economic structure are we going to need to create really unlimited opportunities and have dynamic growth that allows people to do this? Because what happens is, you know, when you're piecing work together, you have periods where you're not doing anything. And you've got to be able to get through those periods. Do we have this giant unemployment structure so that we're essentially subsidizing these whole industries for cities like this, where you heard the whole story about the people that go on unemployment when they're not working for a particular, or they lose a show or a show doesn't occur? I mean, there's all kinds of questions that relate to it. But the idea of getting up, getting in a car, going to an office and doing work is increasingly challenged, considering the kinds of technology that are available and really the kinds of technologies that are in their infancy. You know, the smartphone has really only been around for, well, I'm just thinking maybe 10 years at the most. And I'm talking about, you know, the first iPhones versus the, you know, iPhone 6 or 6B or C or whatever the new iPhone is. So the technology is relatively new and just coming on to the point where with ease, we went to a Starbucks today and it was full of people working, having meetings, talking and working on their cell phones. And they're not playing games. I mean, they're studying, they're working, they're in work groups, they're sharing information, and they're not working in an office. They're working at the local Starbucks or they're up at some house in the hills working there. So I am just really fascinated with these different opportunities. And it's kind of neat to get out of the bunker because you start thinking about that stuff. All right. Thanks once again to Ed Johnson at xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Podcast 348, let's review. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson. 3-day satisfaction guarantee. Financing for all levels of credit. You can apply online at the safe and secure xgovernmentcars.com site 24 hours a day. And don't forget, they've got the Chargers, the Impalas, the next-gen Fords, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. Really, it's a great place to visit and check out what they've got. 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. And yes, I got the PA system on the ambulance all ready to go.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And I got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcasts. Mad Case Studio, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. Click on the banners at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com for these sponsors, as well as all the sponsors. You get more information because it takes you to their Facebook page or website. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. Thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter, and especially thank all of you. Thanks to all of you who have contributed, and thanks for your donations at the BobDavisPodcast.com, keeping me in diesel fuel Fuel and Komodo Dragon Coffee as I travel the highways and the byways of our great nation on the Road Trip Podcast. So thanks for listening to Podcast 348 live from Los Angeles, or as we used to say, Los Angeles, California.